been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier, and as the season moves on, road games get tougher and tougher.
Oh, there's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Back out in front of shot, they score! Brian Little with his first goal since last February, and it's 1-0 quickly for Winnipeg.
Brian Little returns to the Winnipeg Jets lineup, scores his first goal for the Jets in Thursday's loss to the Edmonton Oilers. What do you guys think? Should I throw Rory under the bus to start the show, or should I give him a break?
No, I think we're going to throw you under the bus. That was his second game back.
Second game back, first goal, but that definitely wasn't the clip that Rory was supposed to play there, and that's why he's shaking his head over there behind the board. So don't worry, Rory. We're off to a rousing start on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show
here. It's not Rory's fault. Somehow it's your fault.
Somehow it's my fault? Okay.
Just kidding. Fine.
Okay, fair enough. I can live with it. I don't want to. I mean, Rory's the guy he's the actual brains behind this operation. So
he actually just cut your mic.
So yeah, I'm just done. I'm out for the rest of the day. Basically, you guys take the show. I'm going to go home.
That's why you don't insult Rory. Because at any one point, he can cut
but,
your mic.
Yes, he does hold the power, but it's also good. You know, the brotherhood. You got to be able to give each other the gears. If I give it to you guys, got to be able to give it to Rory at the same time. Anyways, good morning, Winnipeg, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're going to get you set for a busy weekend of Winnipeg Jets action. They're in St. Louis tonight at the Scott Trade Center to play the Blues. Game time 6 p.m. coverage, of course, here on TSN 1290. Then the quick turnaround as they head to the Windy City to Chicago tomorrow evening. Again, game time 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. So a busy weekend filled with two Central Division matchups for the Winnipeg Jets. But before we look ahead to this weekend, we'll look back at the three-game homestand that was this week for the Winnipeg Jets. It started last Sunday when they defeated the Nashville Predators by a 3-0 margin. It continued on Tuesday when they beat the New Jersey Devils by a 3-2 margin, and then a little of unfortunate news for the Jets, a 6-3 home ice defeat on Thursday night against the Edmonton Oilers, where the Connor McDavid Show made an appearance here in Winnipeg, and we haven't really had a chance to talk about McDavid, so why don't we start with that? You know, your insights into McDavid, your thoughts on watching Connor McDavid in a real sort of went in the arena as opposed to IG Field. What did you see? I mean, did you see what I saw, which is just a player that's at another level from pretty much everybody else on the ice?
I think aside from Sidney Crosby, Drew, he's the best player in the world, and I don't think he's very far off from being the best player in the world. I think 3 or 4 years from now, he's probably going to surpass Sidney Crosby, especially when he gets better on the defensive side of the puck, right? So, I mean, his speed and skill is just incredible, and he is worth the price of admission. And Patrick Laine, you know, we have to talk about him as well. I mean, he scores two nice goals, both on the power play. He's worth the price of admission as well. So when you factor in, you know, guys like Patrick Laine and Connor McDavid, and then you throw in Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, Leon Draisaitl, Jesse Puljujarvi, I mean, that was a showcase for some of the best young talent in the game right now, Drew. So
Puljujarvi, of course, a healthy scratch, but the Oilers expect that he's going to be a superstar player.
Yeah, taking two spots after Laine. So you're right. He didn't play in Thursday night's game, but so much skill out there. And, I mean, you know, you mentioned the homestand, Drew, and it obviously starts off really well with the win over the Nashville Predators after they were embarrassed in Nashville 5-1. And I thought the game against the Devils was the really impressive game to me. And I thought that was a really workmanlike effort. And, you know, Corey Schneider played really well, but the Jets were able to get some goals by him. And, you know, a few of them were rebounds. Wheeler and Scheifele get the rebound goals. And then it was Laine who got the beautiful goal on Schneider's blocker side. But to me, that was a very impressive win because the Devils are a very hard team to play against. And I thought that the Jets played really well in their own zone. And then, I mean, when you're talking about Thursday night's game, everything goes wrong for the Jets. And, you know, their power play was clicking, but they, again, take too many penalties. The goaltending wasn't very good. They weren't very good when it came to defensive coverage. You know, Tobias Enstrom and Jacob Trouba, I thought, had a lot of problems all night, especially on Mark Letestu's goal that made it 3-1 for the Oilers. So I think, you know, right now the Jets need wins. I think they have to win both of these games here this weekend. You know, you can't play 500 hockey anymore, Drew. We've talked about it for a long time. So, you know, the homestand, you win two of three games, but when you've lost five games in a row before that, you had to win all three games. You can't just, you know, win a couple games and, you know, expect to turn your season around. So they have to go on a streak here. But overall, I mean, it was a pretty good homestand. Unfortunately, you still kind of have that stench of last Thursday night's loss against Edmonton. So, you know, they got to turn it around, and they have to turn it around starting this afternoon, pardon me, tonight against St. Louis.
In 2014, we were at the draft in Philly, and I remember the scouts were pretty much already looking forward to 2015 in Sunrise, Florida, when they were going to be able to draft McDavid, and that was the talk already. Like, they'd already started talking about this kid the next year when we were right in the midst of the 2014 draft. And now you see why. You really do. Like, he is an absolute generational player. And every single time he was on the ice, you couldn't help but be drawn to what, like, everybody else essentially was irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And it almost, I mean, I'm not saying he's Gretzky yet, obviously, but I'm just saying, like, it is unbelievable to watch a player of that caliber just doing pretty much at will what he would like to do with the puck on the ice. I mean, there's, think about it, every team, I mean, Coach Maurice was talking about, how do you defend against him? And it's like, well, you just try and limit his opportunities. Good luck. Like, really, good luck trying to limit that kid's opportunities. He really does create at will what he would like to do on the ice. And he's essentially limited only by who his line mates are. So, you know, as long as he can find guys, and obviously he can elevate their level of play by what he's able to do and how he's able to get open. But, I mean, we saw it last night. I mean, sorry, on Thursday.
Yeah.
He was simply phenomenal. Well, and it was a Connor McDavid show. I mean, he had, you know, three more assists. He's got the lead league in points. I mean, right now, when that guy is healthy, you know, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers, he makes the Edmonton Oilers just an unbelievable team.
Yeah, and the scary part is he's not yet 20 years old, of course, and he's only going to get better. And so the Oilers did, you know, he was tremendously impressive. Leon Draisaitl, who was playing the wing with Connor McDavid, was also very impressive in that game. You know, the Oilers, unfortunately for Winnipeg Jets fans who've seen this, you know, in the 80s, the Oilers are going to be a Stanley Cup contender.
They've still got some areas of
yeah, but if concern. Assuming that Peter Chiarelli can fill the gaps that's on that team, and if he can't fill them, God help him, because I mean you've been handed Connor McDavid on a platter. Assuming he can fill those gaps, McDavid himself is good enough to lead you deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know the defense has improved from last year, but there's a lot of work to do there. And Cam Talbot has certainly had a better season this year, Drew, thus far than he did last year. He struggled big time for parts of last season, but absolutely. I mean, when you talk about Connor McDavid and, you know, Drew, you know, Dave mentioned his line mates. I mean, Leon Draisaitl, who's a natural center,
has
been playing right wing on that line with Milan Lucic on the left wing. I mean, that line is one of the top lines in hockey. And you could even say that just Connor McDavid being on any line is the top line in hockey. But, I mean, Lucic certainly had a good game, picked up a couple assists on Draisaitl's goal and Letestu's second goal. And, you know, it's a very good line. And, you know, you throw in Puljujarvi, who we talked about, didn't even play Thursday night, fourth overall pick after Pierre-Luc Dubois was surprisingly selected by Columbus. We thought Puljujarvi was going to Columbus. So I think, you know, Edmonton got lucky there with Puljujarvi at fourth overall. But, I mean, I go back to that game, though, Drew, and I say eight shots after two periods for the Jets.
Well, that's
just not good enough.
That's what I was going to actually mention next, is that eight shots against the Edmonton Oilers. And, I mean, for as good as Connor McDavid is, the Edmonton Oilers defense is still not very good.
But if you don't have the puck, it doesn't matter.
It's much better, though. I mean,
it's much better than it was.
And don't get me wrong, Drew. I mean, Taylor Hall for Adam Larson, in my opinion, is still a very bad trade.
Right.
But Klefbom and Larson, and then you throw in Darnell Nurse, who's got another year of NHL experience under his belt. Chris Russell, I told you at the game, Chris Russell was a very underrated signing, in my opinion. It's much better. If they were, you know, a bottom five defense in the NHL last year, I think right now they're more closer to the middle of the pack. So I know what you're saying. It's still not a Norris caliber.
You have to have more than eight shots on goal if you're the Winnipeg Jets against the Edmonton Oilers.
At what point in the second period, Ez looked over at me in the press box and said, have the Jets been stuck on five shots for how long? And it, honestly, it felt like at least 20, 30 minutes of the Jets hadn't had a shot. And then finally they got like maybe – honestly, it was probably like 4 or 5 minutes after that they had their sixth shot of the game. So, I mean, it was like – I mean, the reality is, like I just said, if you don't have the puck, then you're not going to get shots if you don't have puck possession. So,
yeah, and we should mention, I mean, the Jets did have 17 shots in the third period. But,
right,
but by the time the Oilers went up, 5-3, the game was over.
Yeah, but then the Jets also had a 5-on-3 advantage to help, you know, get a couple of those shots. But 5-on-5, I know Connor McDavid's fantastic, but Connor McDavid's not playing each and every shift. So really the Jets should have been able to take advantage on these shifts where Connor McDavid wasn't on the ice, and they weren't able to. The score, I mean, the fact it was 2-1 after 20 minutes, you know, the Jets scored 2 goals on their first 5 shots.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just stopped. Then they just didn't shoot. They just didn't have the puck. And that is troubling.
Well, I mean, and again, they got into penalty trouble, which is what really, I mean, if you look where the Jets' problem area has been, it's when you've become, you know, you show a lack of discipline, and then it really has an opportunity to change the focus of the game.
I think it's the discipline, Dave, and I also think in that game, I think they let the Edmonton Oilers dictate the pace too much, Drew. Am I boring you here? Or?
No, I'm sorry. I'm baby, late night, keep going.
I'm, you know, trying to analyze the game, Dave, and Drew's over here yawning. I don't know what's going on, but...
As when you hit 65, you two will understand.
But the point being, Drew, I thought that the Oilers at times were dictating the pace of that game and the Jets were chasing the game and not managing the puck well, as opposed to against New Jersey, where I thought that they were dictating the pace.
Right.
And the Devils are a speedy team. You know, a guy like Miles Wood had a couple of breakaways there, missed on the penalty shot. But, I mean, the Jets, I think... in certain games this season, have had lulls in games where they're just not really effectively playing their game plan.
So are they too passive?
No, look, and at the end of the day, look, they had a bad road trip, you know, out east, and the fact is they did win 2 of the 3 games. They had a total stinker against the Oilers, but, you know, really it'll be interesting to see how they rebound today against St. Louis because, you know, again, you can't celebrate every win as if it's a Stanley Cup parade, and you can't take every loss as if it's the end of the world. So it wasn't a good game by the collectively as a team. But again, like I said, they had 2 pretty solid wins. The Nashville game, I thought, I mean, obviously it was a 3-0 game, but really it was essentially a 1-0 game with 2 empty net goals.
Mm-hmm.
And the Devils game was a good game, and you know the Devils have been playing pretty good hockey. So I mean, those are 2 solid wins. And then, like I said, it wasn't a good loss against the Oilers. Now, really the key for this team, and I think as hit it on the head, is that you have to turn it around and basically say, look, they only had 10 guys on the ice for practice yesterday, so Maurice is giving these guys time to recuperate.
It was an optional skate yesterday.
It was an optional. Yeah. But I'm saying that, so of the optional, like half the team didn't take it, right? So yeah. you've got guys who are resting up their bodies and really should respond to a poor performance on Thursday. So really, you know, and look, you're going into a St. Louis building where the team I think is like 11-2-0 or something like that at home. They've got a very good home record.
11-1-2 is the St. Louis Blues home record.
Right. So Scott Trade Center is not exactly a friendly place for visiting teams.
No.
And this is and you've got a Central Division game. So really, and you've played poorly in your last game. And we saw when, you know, we thought the Jets might rebound against in a poor effort against, not really a poor effort because I thought they could have beaten Philadelphia, and then they got blown up by Boston. But they don't have that option, especially because this is a Central Division team. So, you know, today we'll see how this team is able to recover from what was essentially a collective. Like, again, I didn't think, with the exception of the 2 Patrick Laine power play goals, that the team played particularly well on Thursday night, as we've just discussed between the three of us. So I think, like, it was a collectively poor game on Thursday. What do we see from this collective group on Saturday?
What is the response when they head into St. Louis later on this evening?
Yeah, because that's the measure of this team. Like, you have to be able to say, you know, how do we respond to adversity? You know, okay, so do something. You can't just talk about it in the media after the game.
These 2 games are going to be really tough against your division.
Mm-hmm.
As St. Louis and Chicago are both playing really well. Both of these teams have a great set of forwards. You could argue that these are the top 2 teams when it comes to forward group, and then very good defense as well. And, you know, Jake Allen, you know, might be struggling a little bit right now. But
Carter Hutton gets the start tonight for the St. Louis Blues.
That.
Yeah, so Carter Hutton. And we'll preview the Jets and the Blues and the Jets and the Blackhawks coming up this hour. But Carter Hutton gets the start for St. Louis. The Jets do manage to avoid Jake Allen.
Yeah, and he's the former Predators backup.
That's right.
He used to back up Pekka Rinne. So the Jets get a bit of a break there. But, you know, Carter Hutton's a pretty decent goalie. And when you have guys like Alex Pietrangelo and Kevin Shattenkirk and Colton Parayko in front of you, you don't generate as much offense as you'd like sometimes. So these next 2 games are going to be very big for the Jets.
We will talk about the Jets and the Blues with Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun coming up next. He joins us from St. Louis. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. You can reach us in studio at Illegal Curve. That's how you do it on Twitter, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the program from the Winnipeg Sun, Ted Wyman. Ted joins us from St. Louis, where he's covering tonight's Jets-Blues game. Ted, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, Ted. How about yourself?
Really very well. Just standing outside the Scott Trade Center here in St. Louis, and very quiet Saturday morning here, and getting ready to watch some game day skates.
There you go. It'll get excited there around 6 o'clock when puck drops between the Jets and the Blues. Ted, the previous segment we were talking about the homestand and how, you know, it was a good homestand in that the Jets won 2 out of 3, but the lingering distaste of the 6-3 loss to the Edmonton Oilers sort of puts a bit of a hamper and it puts a bit of a negative spin on that homestand. How important is this weekend series for the Winnipeg Jets? Both Central Division matchups. Yeah, you won 2 of your last 3, but before that you lost 5 in a row on the road when you went through that Eastern swing. So how important is it for the Jets to bounce back and really have a good showing this weekend against the Blues and the Blackhawks?
I asked Matthew Perreault that exact question at the end of the Oilers game, and he said it's huge. And it is huge because they haven't shown an ability to win on the road, and they've been, you know, struggling. They lost to the Oilers, who are an upper echelon team right now in the Western Conference. These are two upper echelon teams in the Western Conference. If they really want to show that they have the ability to run with these bigger dogs, these games are where they have to show up. They really have to show us something as observers. They have not been, you know, they've been fine at home. And even in that homestand, they lose to Edmonton. They probably could have lost to Nashville with the way that game went in terms of shot attempts and puck possession. And they had a nice game against New Jersey. But nobody's taking what they saw there and buying into the fact that this team is, you know, headed directly to the playoffs. They've got to show something. If they want to make some believers out of people that they're better than what we've seen, they've got to do it now.
So, Ted, the Jets play tonight in St. Louis and then tomorrow in Chicago. Do you expect it to be Connor Hellebuck tonight and then Michael Hutchinson tomorrow, or do you expect maybe Michael Hutchinson to start tonight versus St. Louis?
Can you give me an hour on that one? That's a tough one, right? Because
no, you'll know in an hour. Think, we don't care. We'll know at the same time too by your tweets. We want your opinion about who you would go with.
Yes, I understand that, and I would probably go back to Hellebuck tonight. I know he didn't have a good game against Edmonton, but you got to throw him back in the fire, and then bring the backup in for the second half of the back-to-back. I think that's the way Maurice has generally done it. Hutchinson has had a lot of success in Chicago in the past, and I think they'll like him against him. The only question in my mind that would change that is that Hellebuck was so good against Chicago at home a few weeks ago and shut them out. So, good question, guys. Like, you know, you could go either way on this one, but it's going to be both of them. And historically, I would say if you followed the pattern of Paul Maurice, he'd go Hellebuck today and Hutchinson tomorrow.
Ted, we saw a return of Dustin Byfuglien to the front of the net. And the question I have for you is, do you think that, on the power play, I should say. And so the question I have for you is, do you think that that is something we're going to be seeing more regularly, or do you think that was more of an anomaly?
I think they should. You know, he hasn't been getting his shots through from the point. We've all seen that. He's only got one goal. That hasn't been working. They have another guy that's pretty good at shooting the puck from the point. They might want to get it to him more often. And and getting Buff in front with the big shooter at the point doesn't seem to be a bad move at all. Might get him going a bit, too. You know, I think Maurice really wants to see Buff, you know, get all of his game going. And I think the confidence of putting some pucks in the net could help that for sure. So, yeah, I think for at least the time being, and they should do it. And especially since the power play actually scored some goals. It hasn't been doing very well up until the last game. don't mess with it once you found something that's starting to work.
What did you think of Bufflin's response yesterday? I don't know if I'm assuming you heard his response where he said they asked him if he liked it, and he said it was either that or go sit on the bench. So did you think that was approval of Big Bufflin to that move, or do you think he's just resigned to that? If that's what I have to do, that's what I have to do.
I think the second thing you just said is always true with Buff. He's been pretty good about that, right?
Yeah.
They've moved him around a lot in this organization.
Yep.
They've given him the big minutes on the blue line, and they've said, well, you know what? That's not working. We're moving you up to forward, and he's taken that. He does what the coach has asked him to do, and he's doing that. I think that's kind of a flip answer from Buff, and probably shouldn't be too much read into it.
Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He joins us from St. Louis, where the Jets and the Blues do battle later on this evening. Ted, after the game on Thursday against the Oilers, the Jets lamented, or Paul Maurice lamented, how the team was lacking on the physical side of the game. Only 11 hits in the course of the game. They had said in the pregame they needed to take time and space away from Connor McDavid, and that they didn't do either. And then tonight, you have a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko who, well, he's not as skilled as Connor McDavid. He's certainly one of the more skilled players in the entire NHL. And then tomorrow night, you have Patrick Kane, another guy who's up there in the upper echelon of skill. Did the Jets, are they able to play that physical style where they take time and space away? Or is this team just not built for that style anymore?
Yeah, that's also a good question. You know, they've had lots of high-hit games. They have energy players who go out there and hit guys, so there's no question. So they can do that. But is that time and space, you know, the way that you take away time and space in this day and age is to match speed with speed. And the Jets were a step behind the Oilers all night. They thought that they could do more by being physical and taking away that time and space. And for some reason, even though they said that, they didn't do it. They basically did the exact opposite. They gave them way too much space. So, you know, when you play in a team like St. Louis, it's going to be a different style. These aren't the Oilers, but they know how to win. And they play Ken Hitchcock hockey, and that makes them very difficult. So, you know, you're obviously going to want to do something to put Tarasenko off his game. I saw the Western Conference Final last year, covered part of it, and the San Jose Sharks shut down Vladimir Tarasenko completely. He was invisible. He was not even a part of the series. If you can take him off his game and not have him be a part on the score sheet at all, you have a chance to beat this team. And obviously that's what the Jets will want to do. But when you go out for Edmonton game and say that's what you're going to do and then you don't do it, well, you wonder if, you know, game plan doesn't mean so much if you can't do the execution.
Yeah, Ted, I would expect probably Dustin Bufflin and Josh Morrissey to be seeing a lot of Vladimir Tarasenko tonight. I wanted to ask you about Kyle Connor. He was a healthy scratch in the last game, and you know he's had some difficulties here, and you know he's been injured a little bit. How long before Kyle Connor is sent down to the Manitoba Moose?
I'd have done it already, but I'm not the GM or coach of this team, so they might have different plans. But you know, there's going to be some forwards coming back, and there's not really a spot for him right now. I think he should be with the Manitoba Moose playing first line minutes, not with the Winnipeg Jets playing fourth line minutes. He had 4 minutes in a recent game. The next game he had 0 minutes. Not doing that guy any good at all to sit in the press box. So, you know, if I don't see him in the lineup this weekend, then he should be with the Moose on Monday morning.
So, Ted, the big word that has come out of this week, at least, was discipline. Discipline, discipline. And the Jets showed anything but discipline on Thursday night. Do you think that they adhere to that a little more strictly moving forward, or do you think that the laziness with the sticks and those types of penalties are going to continue with this group?
It's kind of an MO for the Winnipeg Jets, isn't it?
Yep.
To get lazy and take stick infractions. And I thought for the first 15 games of this season, they were all right. They did pretty well. They had cut down on that. I was about to write a column about it, actually. It was pretty funny. I was sitting up in the press box, and I was looking at it, and I was going, boy, these guys have been way more disciplined this year, and I was going to write a story about it. And then that very game, they took about 5 stick infractions, and I went, well, maybe not today. And ever since then, that's what they've been doing. It's just, it's repeatedly happening. Then they say, we can't do it, we can't do it, and then they do it. You know, frank assessment from Patrick Laine the other night. We took some not-so-smart penalties, and the Edmonton Oilers made them pay. And that was a big part of that was that the Oilers are so fast, the Jets were not keeping up with them, and then your stick gets in there, and you try to hold them up a different way. The refs aren't going to let that happen. They never do, and that costs them the game.
Ted, we'll let you go on this last question. It's sort of been a bit of a negative tone, a little bit of negativity regarding it. I want to end it on a bit of a positive note. Nikolaj Ehlers, we're going to be talking about him a little bit later on in the show. Right now, 21 points on the season, 17 assists. He's right up at the top of the NHL in terms of the assist leaders in the league. Is he the best story going on this Winnipeg Jets team that very few people are talking about?
Right, yeah, because everyone's talking about Patrick Laine, and a lot of people are talking about Mark Scheifele, but the one that people aren't talking about so much would be Nick Ehlers, and I agree with that. You know, how can you not be a little bit under the radar when you've got Laine, Scheifele, even Blake Wheeler, who was the leading scorer on the team last year, and Big Buff back on the blue line? You know, those are the bigger storylines, but then Nick Ehlers has done nothing but play great hockey for the Jets, you know, and it's funny because if you ask him, he's almost slumping because he can't get the puck to go in the net. But he's still got 21 points, which is a pretty solid point total. He's setting up guys all over the place. He's creating because I like his shiftiness in the offensive zone. His creativity, his vision have all been really good. And he gets pucks toward the net at least, and that's been creating chances for the other guys on his line. So, you know, I think Ehlers, you know, if you forget about the sophomore slump, he's definitely picked up right where he left off towards the end of last season, and he's even been better. And, you know, if he ends up with 65 points this year, that's going to look pretty good.
It certainly will. The Blues have hit the ice for their optional morning skate, Ted, so we'll let you get in there. Appreciate you joining us. Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun joins us from St. Louis, where the Jets and the Blues do battle later this evening.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for calling.
Take care, Ted. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll preview the weekend's action. The Jets and the Blues, the Jets and the Blackhawks. In-depth preview coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Rangers have killed 16 in a row. Homo Tarasenko. Oh, my God! And he scores with an unbelievable one-handed tuck-in goal. And the Blues have tied the game on a highlight reel goal.
These hands are sick. That is some play right there.
Nickel, they force a turnover. Here's Tate and Kane. 2-on-1, hustling back his point. Number shot, goal!
Vladimir Tarasenko scoring for the St. Louis Blues. Patrick Kane scoring for the Chicago Blackhawks. Going to see some dynamic hockey played this weekend as the Jets head to St. Louis. They're there right now. Then they head to Chicago tomorrow evening. The Jets and the Blues, the Jets and the Blackhawks. 6 p.m. game time. All games, of course, here on TSN 1290. First visit for the Jets to St. Louis. First time they're going to see the Blues this season. Sort of a late time in the season to see your Central Division opponent for the first time. The Jets don't have a ton of success in St. Louis since they came back to town. The Blues are 5-1-1 at home against the Winnipeg Jets. And as we spoke about earlier, they have a tremendous home record of 11-1-2 this far this season. The Blues 14-7-3, good for second in the Central Division. The Blackhawks 16-6-3, good for first in the Central Division through 24 and 25 games respectively. The Blackhawks actually leading the entire NHL right now in points. Big challenge for the Winnipeg Jets this weekend. They have to play. They you know, Ted just spoke about it. You guys, we spoke about it earlier. If the Jets are undisciplined, if the Jets are not playing at peak performance, they just can't. They're not good enough to beat the Blues or the Blackhawks unless they're firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, they have to play mistake-free hockey, guys. And you know, you talk about staying under the penalty box. I think that's a given with the Winnipeg Jets, especially because their penalty kill just hasn't been able to bail them out, Drew. But when you're talking about the St. Louis Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks this weekend, these are two of the best teams in the NHL. One of these teams is most likely going to win the Central Division.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned Vladimir Tarasenko. He had 4 points last game, didn't practice yesterday, but he's going to play tonight versus the Jets. And you know, the power play, Vladimir Tarasenko and Kevin Shattenkirk are leading the way. 23 combined power play points for the two of those players. Yeah. We'll see how long Kevin Shattenkirk is on the Blues, because if they don't give him an extension, he might be a trade candidate. But certainly, you know, he's one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL right now. And, you know, Jake Allen isn't playing tonight. It's going to be Carter Hutton, who struggled a little bit. His goals against average is above .300. Save percentage is below 90%. So they get a bit of a break there. But, you know, this is a transition year in a lot of senses for the St. Louis Blues, not only with David Backes going to Boston, Drew,
mm-hmm.
but with Ken Hitchcock saying that it's his last year as a head coach in the NHL, and Mike Yeo is going to take over. He's the assistant right now. But if you look at this Blues team, it's almost identical to the team last year, with the exception of David Backes and coming in there, leaving.
Yeah.
You know, it's the exact same group of forwards here. You know, they're obviously led by Vladimir Tarasenko and Paul Stastny and Jaden Schwartz and Robbie Fabry in his second year. You know how much I like Robbie Fabry, great little player. And you know, it's a good team, 5-on-5, good team special teams. Their penalty kill is second best in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So if you want to find a weakness right now with the St. Louis Blues team, the only weakness I would say is maybe in net. And even though Jake Allen, you know, started off okay, Drew, you know, previous, you know, to his little run there, he led in more than 3 goals in 3 consecutive games. So, you know, he's struggling a little bit. But again, Carter Hutton will get the start, and he's the backup, obviously. And I think he's gone into only 7 or 8 games this year. So,
yeah, 7 games for Hutton so far this year. Started 5 of them. So he came in relief in 2 games. He's 2-4, like you said, an .891 save percentage and a 2.98 goals against average. So you're right. The Jets do get a bit of a break there in. I mean, Jake Allen, although he struggled recently, is clearly a better goaltender than Carter Hutton is.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Dave. And you know, you look at this team, and right now, you know, with the Winnipeg Jets, the way they're playing, I mean, they're a vulnerable team that needs a good start, and you know, they need a win here, and they need 2 wins.
You know, Carter Hutton actually, if you remember, whenever we played for the Predators, always seemed to play well against Winnipeg. I don't know why. I remember when you think, okay, you're getting a little bit of a reprieve because you're not playing against Pekka Rinne, and then you'd see Carter Hutton come in, and you know, he seemed to. I think he played at least 3 games last, you know, in the last couple of years against the Jets for the Predators. Now the Jets themselves against the Central have been very good at home. I think they're 4-0 against Central teams, but they're 1-4-1 when it comes to being on the road against the Central. And you know, it's simply not good enough. I mean, you just have to be able to win these divisional games against, you know, teams like the St. Louis and Chicago if you want to be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be a playoff team, now the Jets have also shown some good resolve in terms of their back-to-backs, so that's a good thing for them. They've played, you know.
Also a back-to-back for the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks are in Philadelphia this afternoon, so it is a back-to-back for both teams. Blackhawks get about a 6-hour advantage in that they started at 1 o'clock. Or they started noon Central as opposed to the Jets who start at 6 Central.
Right, exactly. So. But as just said, you can't afford to lose these games, or you can't afford to go, you know, 1-2, especially because of that 0-5 road trip. So you have to start winning pairs of games, you know, like if you can win 2, especially against the Central. I mean, we talk about how important these games are, mm-hmm. and you can't discount the importance of a game in November and December and forgetting about the whole American Thanksgiving, because maybe it's skewed due to the fact that it's a bit of a later start than usual. The fact of the matter is that these are points that you just can't hand to your opponents and then think, well, we can make them up in, you know, in January, February, March, because you just don't, because, you know, you see teams perennially start to fall. And then this is kind of when that time it is. So,
and Dave, in previous years, we've seen a lot of those quote unquote heavy games between the Jets and the Blues, but the Blues have actually moved away from that a little bit. They're not as
Backes
physical.
Out of your lineup.
Yeah. Well, and Backes and just, you know, the overall style of their game, you know, a guy like Ryan Reeves,
mm-hmm.
you know, is a guy who can throw his weight around and drop the gloves and all of that. So they have players that can do that. But I think as a whole, this group has moved away from that and they've become more of a puck possession skill team. And, you know, when you look at this group of forwards, and I think you could argue that, you know, their top 3 lines are the best in hockey right now with, you know, you got Robbie Fabry, Alex Steen, and Tarasenko on your second line.
Yeah.
And Schwartz, Stastny, and Perron is your first line there. And even on that third line with, you got Jori Lehterä, Sentry, and Yaskin, and Berglund. I mean, this is a team that has three great scoring lines, and you know, you've got to be sharp against them. And you know, they've got a great group of defensemen there. We're used to seeing Jay Bomeister and Alex Petrangelo, and they'll most likely match up against the Mark Scheifele line. And then your second pair of Carl Gunnarsson and Kevin Shattenkirk, whether they match up against the second line of Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, and Drew Stafford, or maybe they decide to put them up against Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, and Nikolai Ehlers. Regardless, this is a very good team, Drew, from top to bottom in St. Louis. So, you know, the Jets are going to have to elevate their game for sure.
A little interesting about the Blues, I mean, that they're not as defensively stout as we would expect or have seen in past years from a Ken Hitchcock team. Normally, the Blues are up at the top of the NHL in terms of goals against. This year, they're actually 20th. So the Blues, for their 14-7-3 record...
That'll improve.
...which is an impressive record, 14-7-3, their goals for, goals against differential, is actually just zero. They've scored 67, they've given up 67. So offensively, they're capable, but this is not your typical shutdown St. Louis Blues team defensively. I would expect that to improve.
I guarantee you by the end of the year, that'll be top 10.
I would probably expect that it's likely going to be, but it is a little bit unique for a St. Louis Blues team 25 games into the season.
Yeah, small sample size, but I agree. I mean, yeah, sure, you'd expect that, but I'm just saying, I mean, by the end of the year,
yeah,
you know, maybe we'll put a little friendly wager on that.
I don't want to. Hey, after you won the Grey Cup bet, I'm not wagering with anything.
There was no bet. I just picked them.
I know.
I didn't put any money on it.
You should have put more money on it. I'm not wagering against you at this point in time. But to your point, Izzy, about the Blues not being as physical, you're right. They're top six. Nobody over 6 feet tall in their top six. I mean, you got guys like, you know, Tarasenko and Fabry. Well, they're not physical guys. They're skill guys. Alex Steen is not a physical guy. He's a skill guy for the most part. You know, Paul Stastny, you know, David Perron. These guys aren't overwhelmingly going to grind you down low like you have seen with previous Blues team. Now, their bottom six, much more physical. Much more physical than the Jets' bottom six as well. So it'll be sort of a tale of two teams there with the St. Louis Blues.
I think if you're looking at this game specifically, and you're saying, okay, the Jets and the Blues score about the same number of goals this season. Blues have allowed 11 less goals than the Jets have, so that's one of the keys, obviously, is the goaltending is going to have to be very good tonight. We know that because you're not getting the matchups you want. The other coach is going to be imposing what lines he wants to see against. So that's a factor, is that, you know, whomever is playing, whether it's Hutchinson or Hellebuck, either one is going to have to be very good. The other thing is the Jets, I think it's twofold for Winnipeg. I think they have to come out and have a very good first period. And I think that, you know, look, we've seen how they've been in the second period. I think they've been outscored now 35-17 in second periods this season. And you just can't have that lull for 20 minutes every game. It's just not acceptable. You can't, if you expect, again, this is all based on the rationale that you're not growing as a team, but you have an expectation that you're a playoff team. And if you're an expectation of you're a playoff team, then you can't have these lapses. You just simply can't, because maybe once, but not continuously.
And Dave, they've beat Chicago at home. They've beat Dallas at home. They haven't played St. Louis yet this year, but they have two games against the Hawks in December, right, Drew? So
both on the road.
You have to win these games on the road. You've shown that you can do it at home.
Right.
They've beat some good teams. You know, we mentioned the 8-2 win over Dallas was arguably the best game of the year for the Jets.
Yeah.
So, and I realized Dallas at the time had a lot of injuries, but regardless, Dallas is a Stanley Cup favorite, so they have to start winning some games in their division on the road.
Well, the Jets are 3-8-2 on the road. They have to start winning some games, period, on the road, and they might as well start it with a couple division games this weekend. I should mention before we head to break that this segment was brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place for breakfast this morning, maybe you're driving around looking to grab a bite to eat, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. And if you're looking for a place to watch the games tonight and tomorrow night, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. Great drink specials as well.
Yeah, just make sure you get an Illegal Curve sandwich.
Naturally. It's always good for breakfast and or for dinner.
Yep.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the Jets forward lines with the team getting healthier. And, of course, we haven't even touched on the Jets and the Blackhawks. We'll do that as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It's a shorthanded goal by Brian Little. Backhand score! Matthew Perreault!
Crow Little getting healthy. Jets almost back to full strength in their forward group. Of course, Joel Armia and Sean Mathias still a ways away from returning to the team, but definitely healthier than they have been for a number of weeks now that Perreault, Stafford, and Little have returned to the Winnipeg Jets lineup. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Marty Biron to start hour number two. Should mention this segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Gentlemen, as we mentioned, Jets getting healthy. Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, they stayed together after the game on Thursday. They were together for the game on Thursday. Wheeler with Little and Stafford. Dano, Lowry, and Tanev. And then Matthew Perreault with Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorburn on the quote-unquote fourth line. Now that the team's getting healthy, now that they got some of their legs back underneath them, how would you deploy the Jets' forward lines going forward? Are you okay with this current deployment that Paul Maurice is using, or do you expect to see him change it up? And we'll know probably more in about within the next hour or so as the Jets head to the ice for a game day skate in St. Louis.
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew, because as you know, Paul Maurice always seems to have that blender right by his side, right? So, I mean,
which is weird because there's not a lot of room on the bench for a blender, but he seems to have.
Sometimes he has to make a margarita while he watches the team. You know, he add a little tequila. It makes things a lot go down a lot smoother.
I'm sure Paul did that on Thursday night.
Yeah, Paul's more of a smoothie guy, I think, Drew. But when you look at these lines, I mean, come on, guys. They're not going to break up Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, and Nikolai Ehlers right now. I mean, we'll see what happens in the coming weeks here, but I think right now that line is playing very well. And I was telling Dave this at the game on Thursday night. Blake Wheeler, Drew Stafford, and Brian Little, since being put together for the last two games, has been very good. Brian Little scores 35 seconds into the game against the Edmonton Oilers, and unfortunately they don't win, but I think Brian Little was very good in his first game back as well against the New Jersey Devils. So I think, and we've seen the familiarity with Brian Little and Blake Wheeler over the years, so I think right now the top two lines are fine for me. I think the problem that I have right now is you're not getting a lot of scoring in the bottom two lines. And Matthew Perreault's not going to stay on the fourth line. We know why Matthew Perreault started the game against the Edmonton Oilers on the fourth line. It was his first game back in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're not going to put him right into the fire on the first line or second line. And the way the top two lines were playing against the Devils, Drew, I don't think anybody expected those lines to change. So right now, I think, you know, Tanev, Lowry, and who am I missing on that third line?
Tanev, Lowry, and Dano.
Dano on that third line. I think has been really good. And, you know, Dano doesn't miss a game, and he has the shiner and all that. We actually saw him after the game. And, you know, I think, you know, Marco Dano is one of those guys that has played very well since being called up from the Manitoba Moose. So right now I think the bottom two lines are a bigger concern for me. You know, what are you going to do with Matthew Perreault? Are you going to keep him on wing, or are you going to move him to center? But certainly right now, guys, they have to get more secondary scoring. I mean, you're still counting on Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Blake Wheeler too much. So maybe you see some changes on the bottom two lines. You know, Kyle Connor, does he go back into the lineup tonight? Maybe. Is he going to get sent down to the Moose? Maybe. We'll see. But for right now, Sean Mathias and Joel Armia don't look like they're coming back anytime soon. I mean, it might be 2 or 3 weeks, right, Dave? So I think right now the top two lines are clicking pretty well, and you got to get some more consistency from the third and fourth lines.
Yeah, the way Coach Maurice talks about the recovery of those two, he talks end of December, beginning of January. And generally when they do that, that means my expectation for both those players is January.
Mid-January, probably.
No, I wouldn't go that far, but I would say sometime in January. Like, you know, that's when we're probably hearing about them being back on the ice and that sort of thing. Now, in terms of the lines, I agree with that. It's like the top lines have been producing fairly well. I mean, you see, I mean, again, Brian Little, what he brings to this team and the stability that he brings to this lineup and just how good he is. And let's remember, Brian Little's played 2 hockey games in like 8 months. Yeah. So, I mean, you can't expect – I mean, despite the fact that – and it's funny because we talked about prior to his first game how he was just going to be eased back into the lineup, somewhat like what they did with Matthew Perreault, starting him a little bit easier. And instead, they put him right on the PK. They put him on the PP. They put him, you know, in all situations. And he excels because that's just what Brian Little does. Brian Little's the guy who brings consistency to this lineup, and he really is. I mean, Blake Wheeler said it I don't remember when exactly, if it was after a game or just prior. He goes, you just really recognize when he's not there. And I mean that as the biggest compliment. That was what Blake Wheeler said. Right. And you do. You see what you're missing when he's not around. And then as soon as you get him, it's almost like you just take for granted what the Brian Little brings to your lineup and that stability and that consistency. So, I mean, getting him back is huge. Getting him and that chemistry with Blake Wheeler was evident right away mm-hmm. in that first goal against the Oilers. I mean, it's just, you know, and Drew Stafford's fine. Like, you know, he's got to get his – I mean, they need scoring from him, no question about it. Yeah. But he's looked like he's been okay with those guys. My biggest concern is the, quote, third line as they have it constructed right now with Lowry, Dano, and Tanev. I have no problems with them as your fourth line. I think that as your fourth line is a solid fourth line. I think where the Jets are lacking right now is a third line. So realistically, you've got Matthew Perreault, who's going to be that third line center once he's healthy. You know, I mean, I guess you in theory could have him as your winger. But I have Perreault as like a third line as your third line center, and that really gives you a nice depth up the middle with Shifley, Little, Perreault, and then Lowry as your fourth line or Kopp or whatever you want to do. And then the question marks really are who would be Perreault's wingers?
Well, if you're going to go with Perreault up the middle,
mm-hmm.
and for whatever reason you're still holding on to Kyle Connor, I'd put Kyle Connor back into the lineup, at least for tonight, you know, maybe tomorrow night, unless they're planning on sending him down.
I get a feeling that Connor's going back into the lineup. That's just a hunch.
I would put, and we'll know more, like I said, more within the hour or so. I would put Connor back in the lineup and put him with Perreault. Put two skill guys together and see if they can get some skill going.
That's what I was getting at. My point is that, and again, none of us are the coach, so we don't make these decisions, but just in terms of our, you know, what you see and what you think could work, I would have, you know, Perreault with this, because Perreault is a facilitator, although he has shot more of late, but he generally is a very good passer. He can, you know, get that puck to you. Connor is a shooter. I mean, I watched a lot of his games at Michigan. I mean, the kid has an excellent shot. It's a question of time and space. So if you get him with someone who's skilled like Perreault and who can get him the puck, maybe we are able to see a little bit more of what, you know, Kyle Connor, because the Jets are doing Kyle Connor no service by playing him on the fourth line.
With guys in a grinder sort of role, with guys who can't facilitate the play.
Exactly. And then people are like, well, why is Kyle Connor not doing anything? It's like, well, he's playing 3 minutes or 5 minutes a game. What do you expect him to do?
Sure.
And again, not with players who are going to be getting him that puck.
Put Perreault up the middle. Put Connor on one side. Flank Marco Dano on the other side, because Dano has the most offensive talent of the current bottom six.
Yeah, no,
and then go with Kopp, Lowry, and Tanev as your fourth line. And then so that takes, you know, Thorburn out of the lineup, you know, so be it. Get some skill into the bottom six. Right now it's too much of a grinding bottom six.
Right. Well, and they got to get some offense even though I like Brandon Tanev a lot, and he probably got my favorite goal of the year against the Detroit Red Wings as the game winner, but he's got 2 goals in 26 games. Andrew Kopp's got 2 goals in 16 games. And even Matthew Perreault, you know, before he went down with the injury, had 1 goal in 11 games. So, I mean, they've got to get more offense from some of these guys. You can't expect Patrick Laine to get a hat trick every night. You just can't. You can't expect an 18-year-old to be the guy who's driving the bus. You can't expect it to always be Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. You sometimes have to get those contributions, especially when you're going up on the road and you're playing two really good teams in the Chicago Blackhawks and St. Louis Blues. So I agree. If Connor's going to, you know, provide that offensive spark on the third or fourth line, do it. And long term, it's not going to work. I agree. Long term, you ideally don't want Kyle Connor playing 6 or 7 minutes a game. I don't think that really suits his development very well. So, but you got to get something going here.
Well, because the more skill you put on the ice, the more you create matchup problems for other teams.
Well, in theory, yeah.
In theory, I mean, obviously, everything, you know, for the most part, you know, who knows what actually happens when they get into the game. But if you're the opponents and you're looking at the Winnipeg Jets, you're like, okay, well, it's clear that I only need to really worry about 2 of the 4 lines in terms of scoring goals.
The good teams in the NHL, Drew, as you know, we've talked about it for the 7 years we've been doing the show.
Mm-hmm.
Really good teams have 3 good scoring lines, not 2, not 1, 3.
Yeah.
And then you have a good fourth line that can muck it up. And the Jets do have 4 good lines. I'm not saying that you know, these 4 lines are not good lines. I think right now that they're having a little trouble putting the puck in the net. And, you know, hopefully, you know, they can turn it around here tonight against the St. Louis Blues. But I certainly think right now that those third and fourth lines might be blended by Paul Maurice.
Yeah, and I think there would be a good opportunity tonight to get Kyle Connor back into the lineup. Because as you said, Dave, they're doing absolutely no service to him, A, having him in the press box, and B, when he's not in the press box, having him play in a fourth-line role for, you know, a handful of minutes at a time.
Like, Coach Maurice talked about the value of players gaining experience with the team, even if they're not on the ice. And he was talking about Chase DeLeo, and I did something on the site about it a couple weeks ago when DeLeo was up with the Moose. Yeah. I mean, with the Jets, sorry, and
spent
not playing.
About a week he spent with the Jets, didn't get into any game action.
Didn't get into any games, practiced, and that sort of thing. And then when asked about it, what the value was, Maurice referenced what it was. Joel Armia, who came up with the from the Moose to the Jets, didn't play a game for like 3 weeks, but had an opportunity to practice, had an opportunity to get familiar with the team. You know, but then again, you look at so I'm saying for Kyle Connor, you know, he is gaining valuable NHL experience. He's gaining a lot of familiarity with his teammates who could be his future teammates. But then you see what's happening with Jack Roslovic down with the Moose, being a top scorer with the Manitoba Moose, playing the big minutes, playing in all situations. To me, again, I hate to...
All due respect to Maurice, I don't buy his argument.
No, Connor's got to play on the ice.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, to me, it's like, do you want to have another Alexander Burmistrov situation where a guy was called up way too... Never really played any time with the AHL affiliate, spent all his time with the NHL team, really didn't do himself any favors. I just think, like, for Kyle Connor's long-term development, he's much better suited, at least this year, with the Manitoba Moose.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Marty Biron joins us. We'll talk to the former goaltender. Always appreciate having Marty on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Always pleased to welcome to the program TSN hockey analyst Marty Biron. Marty, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Marty. Obviously brought you on to talk about the world of hockey. I want to start here in Winnipeg, though, as Connor Hellebuyck has become the clear-cut number one goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. Despite not putting up the best numbers, .908 save percentage, 2.76 goals against average. Not sure how much of the Jets you've had the opportunity to watch this year, but in your viewings of the Jets, what have you seen from Connor Hellebuyck as a former goalie yourself?
I was actually surprised this morning when I was doing some homework and looking at the stats that he played in 19 games. I mean, that is a lot. I think he's 9-9, not doing extremely well, as you said, but I think he's slowly getting there. The Jets have been playing better of the last 2-3 games. They lost a hard one to the Edmonton Oilers, but when you decide to give the Oilers all this free time on the power play, after being up 2-1 after a good first period, it just went downhill from there. But I think that I look at Connor Hellebuyck and I think that the ceiling is the highest, right? It's one of those where you know that there's room to grow. He's got the size, he's got the structure down. Now it's a matter of making everything look easy. And that's what the good goalies in the National Hockey League do. I mean, I look at guys like Chad Johnson in Calgary. Mm-hmm. Man, everything he does looks easy. And he's not the flashiest of goalie, and he doesn't have to be. And that's how he's overtaken that number one spot. Carey Price is the best. He makes everything looking easy. Even a guy like Tuukka Rask now makes things look easy. I mean, that is the key you have to do as a goalie, and that's what the next step for Connor Hellebuyck is just to, you know, make the game, slow the game down, make it easy, and then everybody feeds off of it. Now, another thing I was thinking about is a lot of time you decide on who your number one goalie is and who you're going to play a ton of game on, and it's not just about the games. It's also about the practices, and I've seen it at times where goalies get lit up in practices, and it doesn't give the team really a lot of confidence. So it'd be funny to see one of those days. I'd have to do some more homework and find out what's the practice habits like for Hutchinson as opposed to Hellebuyck, and see if that has anything to do with the fact that Hellebuyck is playing all of these games.
Marty, as you know, Jacob Trouba missed the early part of the season. as he was trying to negotiate his new contract with the Winnipeg Jets. In 11 games back with the Winnipeg Jets, I believe they've only won 4 of those games. What kind of an impact does that have on a team when a guy sits out the early part of the season and then he comes back and then the team starts to struggle?
Well, I mean, it's tough mentally, but I don't think you can put all of the struggles on Jacob Trouba. You're not going to be a worse team with Jacob Trouba in your lineup that you are with him. I think there's other factors that come into play. You know, sometimes the opposition, the strength of schedule, you know, missing somebody down the middle on a second line, or as was the case with Little. So, I mean, getting Little back and having Trouba in the fold and getting some of these pieces back, it helps the Jets. It doesn't hurt them. Now, again, if you look at the next 6 games, they've got a big test in front of them. They got St. Louis. I think there's Calgary, Edmonton in there, maybe a Chicago team, if I recall. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a tough test. And then they're going to have a week off. So, you know, that bye-week type scenario. So there's a big 6 game because the standings for the Jets, it's so compressed. You go from Calgary, Edmonton, Minnesota, Nashville. Everybody's winning 2 points of each other. And, you know, a couple of wins or a good stretch puts you right back at the top of the conference or in the thick of the race. So that is a big, big stretch for them. And having those pieces back and having Trouba play maybe more comfortable 10 games into it. Sometimes you finally get your legs going. That's only going to help the Jets.
So, Marty, in 2000, 2001, you played 17 or 18 games for the Sabres, and then the next season you transitioned and you're the starter, you played 72. What does that mean when you get kind of anointed as the starter? Meaning, like, for Connor Hellebuck, who now is seen, you know, last year he played 20, he kind of split between Hutchinson and Pavlik. Now he's seen as the number one guy, the go-to guy. What does that mean for a goalie's mentality?
Well, it changes totally. I came in after playing a really good second pro year with the Rochester Americans and was called up to Buffalo in the first 5 games of the season, my third pro year, the 99-2000 season, because Dominik Hasek went down with an injury. I didn't have time to think. I came in, I played 35 games, Hasek came back, I sat on the bench, and then I was like, whoa, what just happened? My next year, my second NHL season, I got to sit back and just watch Hasek, watch and learn about the league, and prepare myself mentally, knowing that this was going to be Dom's last season in Buffalo, most likely. Ian mentioned he wanted to retire the year before, so there was a lot going on. So I kind of knew, so I got a chance to prepare myself as to, okay, how does a number one goaltender in the National Hockey League, that's won Vezina Trophy, that's won MVP, that, you know, at the time had won a gold medal in the Olympics and carried a Czech team on his back, how does he prepare? Was I able to do everything he did? Absolutely not. But was I able to learn a lot from him? Yes. He wanted to play every night. He wanted to mentally be ready every night. Physically, he took care of himself. I tried to do the same thing. It didn't always work. But it's a change of mentality. When you sit on the bench for 60-plus games in a season, and now the next year you're asked to play in 70-plus games, it just feels like a whirlwind. I remember starting the season and ending the season and wondering to myself, what just happened? I was getting married that next summer in 2002. We were in the middle of building a house. I completely blacked out. I just was hockey, 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 hockey. My family, my friends, my wife were like, man, you were just gone. You just focused on the game, and which is fine because it was busy and that was important, but you just transform into this new person because you have so much on your mind.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Marty, of course, as a TSN hockey analyst. Marty, a lot of talk about the goaltending equipment and how it was on track to, you know, be introduced at the start of the year. It didn't happen due to, you know, manufacturing issues. And now it's slowly beginning to make its way into the league and into some of the goaltenders. How significant will the slim-down pants and the slim-down upper body padding be for goaltenders, and do you expect to see a spike in scoring as a result?
I'm going to tell you this, especially with the pants this season, it's significant enough for some goalies that I don't think it's going to happen 100% throughout the league. I think there's goalies that are going to battle till the end of times. That's the hill they're going to die on, but they will not put on the new pants because it is affecting them too much. Some of the goalies I've talked to are saying their new pants are the same size or even bigger than their old ones. You know, they just had to get accustomed to it. But I believe the big goalies, the Robin Leonard, the Carey Price, the Ben Bishop, are going to be fine because they're still going to be able to fill the net. They're still going to be big. They're still going to be able to shop in the big and tall section and still going to be fine. It's going to affect the smaller goalies. It's going to affect the 6 foot to 6 foot two goalies that are 185 pounds that look like they're 230 when they put their equipment on. So that is going to be a big factor. And now the pants are one thing. Like I said, the pants are supposed to be in effect this year at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to happen. The chest and arm protector is supposed to be only next year. That is going to be the big piece. That is going to be affecting more goalies. That is going to slim down their upper bodies. Instead of putting your arms to your side and covering all this net, you're going to have to make a decision. Am I going to squeeze my arms to my body when the puck comes in, or am I going to react to a shot that's going out a little bit? That's going to be having a lot more of an impact on the goaltending equipment than the pants are. I mean, like I said, I talked to some goalies, and they said, yeah, I've been wearing the new pants for the last week or two, and they're fine. They're as big as my old ones, and they don't see a difference. And some of the goalies are saying, there's no way I'm putting those on this year. They are a player's pants. They're like spandex to me, and I don't think that's fair. So it's going to be a big battle, but I don't think that the league will be able to implement that new pants rule in the middle of the season. I think there's going to be too much pushback from goaltenders.
Marty, you're a great goaltender from Quebec, and I want to ask you about another great goaltender from Quebec, Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, right now he's struggling with the Pittsburgh Penguins, even though the Pittsburgh Penguins have a great record in the Eastern Conference, but Matt Murray is simply outplaying him right now. What's that like for Marc-Andre Fleury right now? He's been the guy there in Pittsburgh for so long. There are so many rumors that he might be traded before the deadline in March. What do you think he's going through right now?
Well, it's funny how he started to struggle when the rumors started swirling that the Pittsburgh Penguins would be willing to trade him or would be looking to trade him this season. I think it would be in the best interest of the Penguins and Marc-Andre Fleury to say, you know what, we're not trading you. We'll figure it out at the end of the season. We need both you and Matt Murray to perform well, to get us going in the playoffs and to get us going to a cup again this year. There's no need to trade Fleury. It's not like Murray's making $5 million and they've got two goalies making $5 million. Their cap hit for goaltenders is fine. There's no need for that. And then now it becomes a thing where I've been there. Every time there was trade rumors, my head went wondering, like, oh, I better play well tonight. There's people watching. You know, maybe Vegas is watching or whatnot. And that's not how you want to play. You want to play because you want to win a game. You want to play because you want to help your team. And so I think players play a lot better when they don't have to worry about rumors and they don't have to worry about where their next destination is going to be. Look at Steven Stamkos. And, you know, it affected him last year. Will he be in Toronto? Will he be somewhere else? What's happening? And then when he came back this year before hurting himself, he was Steven Stamkos of old. He was, you know, using his one-timer and scoring goals. I think with Marc-Andre Fleury, it's the same thing. Now, do I expect him to be moved before next season? Absolutely. He's going to go somewhere. There's teams that are going to be needing goalie. There's the Vegas impact and all of that. That's going to happen. But if I was the Pittsburgh Penguins, I'd say, hey, it's not going to happen this year, or I wouldn't want it to happen this year, and I would make it public, and that's it. We're not talking about it anymore, and then you guys go and play and do your thing.
Marty, we're more than a quarter past the season so far, and I'm just wondering, is there anything that's caught you off guard or caught you by surprise so far?
Well, there's a lot of things that caught me by surprise. I mean, I love the way the Toronto Maple Leafs are playing. They're exciting, and either in the loss or in a win, they're very exciting. I'm surprised with the Boston Bruins, the way they're playing, the Ottawa Senators, the way they're playing, and how they've battled with adversity with Nicole Anderson and her cancer diagnosis, and now the fact that Craig Anderson is leaving and coming back and leaving and coming back. Listen, I covered an Ottawa game not too long ago. I was in their locker room, and the guys didn't know until that morning skate who was going to play that night, and then all of a sudden Craig Anderson was there, got dressed, went on the morning skate, played the night, And they were like, hey, we didn't know. I mean, that was early on, but still, to be able to mentally prepare yourself to play a game as a team, not knowing if your star goaltender is going to be there or not, and then to be able to play with all the distraction and all the focus on your wife and your family and our health, for Craig Anderson to do as well as he's done. I mean, I tip my hat to him. I tip my hat to the Ottawa Senators, the whole organization, and his the support staff there, because they've done an amazing job. And, you know, again, Mike Cotton comes in, plays really well, helps Craig Anderson take a little bit of a break. It's just been an amazing story. And hopefully, you know, the positive that's surrounding the story on the ice will be surrounding them off the ice, and that Nicole and the whole family will get you know, good treatments, and will get better, and that will everybody will be okay through that. But I'm really impressed with the way the Ottawa Senators have reacted with all of this.
Marty, well said. We're going to let you leave on this last question. Here in Winnipeg, we, of course, pay special attention to our Central Division opponents. One of those opponents is the Dallas Stars. They were a popular pick to maybe represent the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup Finals this coming season, coming off of the Central Division Championship last year. You look at their goaltending, and that was all the talk in the offseason. The goaltending. Thus far, both Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen have goals against averages above 3.20. Is this the team that's most desperate for a true number one goaltender in the entire NHL?
They are, but they can't afford it, because who's going to take one of those two goalies that's making over $5 million? They have $10.5 million in two goalies, and none of them can stop a puck. I mean, it's just tough. And then everybody's excited when all of a sudden they win a game 5-2, and Niemi or Lehtinen make through a 25 save, and you realize you're like, hey, that's just normal. That's the way a goalie should be all the time. It shouldn't be the exception to the rule. It should be the rule, and the exception should be a shutout or maybe getting blown out one of those games. So that happens, but it's tough. I mean, I know it's painful for Lindy Ruff. It's painful for the players. They're trying to keep a straight face. They're trying to spin it and saying last year we had both goalies at 25 wins. It was a great year for them. No, it's not. When you have two goalies with 25 wins, you don't know where your number one goalie is, and it's just because your team is that good and your goalies are handicapping your team. It's not the other way around. So they're struggling, and they'll struggle until they find a goalie there.
Marty Biron is a TSN hockey analyst. Marty, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy your weekend.
You too, Marty. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
Set to break. When we come back, we talk about Nikolai Ehlers and the quiet impact he's been having. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Nikolai Ehlers of the Winnipeg Jets. A montage of some of the goals he has scored as a member of this team. Sort of going under the radar. We talked to Ted Wyman about him earlier in the program. Ted, of course, being in St. Louis. And Dave, you wrote about him on illegalcurve.com.
Yep.
About Nikolai Ehlers and how he's got, I mean, he's 21 points so far this year. Goal numbers are a little bit low. Four goals.
But they're not against his previous year. They're actually this fairly close. I think he had five instead of four.
And let's be perfectly honest. I mean, he should have. He's had so many golden opportunities that you know, four goals seems to be the absolute bare minimum he could have had at this point in the season. 17 assists. Nikolai Ehlers is, you know, he's not getting the fanfare of Scheifele, not getting the fanfare of Laine. But very quietly, he's sort of the straw that stirs the drink for the Winnipeg Jets this season.
Dave, just before you get in, I don't know if it's that he's not getting the fanfare. I don't think he's getting the media attention.
Right.
I think that's what I meant.
I didn't mean fan as in fan, sure. But okay. Yeah.
No,
I meant notoriety. How about that?
Yeah, I definitely don't think he's getting the notoriety.
Yeah, and I think if you look at what he's what he does on the ice on a fairly regular basis, I mean, the guy's vision is next level. His skill is also pretty next level. And Ez is right. Like, the reality is that you're overshadowed by Mark Scheifele, who at times this year was leading the NHL with points, and Patrick Laine, who, you know, of course, had the most goals in the NHL for a while and was, you know, is the rookie leader with goals. And so, you know, when you have those two guys as your line mates, a lot of times it's easy to be kind of overlooked. But, I mean, a lot of what happens in this, you know, in this on this team is because of Nikolaj Ehlers and what he's able to do. And it really is just remarkable. I mean, look at the names that he's, you know, tied with. Getzlaf, Sagan, and Duncan Keith for assists. You know, I mean, that's a fairly significant number when you're saying, you know, this is Nikolaj Ehlers. And we always talk about this sophomore slump in sports and how guys generally have a tendency, as the rest of the league learns how to defend against you. You know, it's one thing to come in as a rookie and, you know, you may have played junior, but NHL teams don't really scout you to that same degree. But after a year of NHL experience, teams have a better idea as how to defend against you. And Nikolaj Ehlers is showing that he can use speed and vision to really kind of avoid that.
I think when you look back at that 2014 draft in Philadelphia, guys, and we were all there, I think it's going to turn out, history is going to say that the Jets got a steal at number 9 with Nikolaj Ehlers, taken right after William Nylander. And William Nylander is a good player, but I think you look at some of the other players, Michael Dalcol hasn't worked out with the Island, and, you know, obviously it's still early here, but, you know, Ehlers, to Dave's point, and I think the difference between this year and last year, Dave, is Nikolaj Ehlers had significant scoring droughts last year. I forget if it was 10 or 12 games he went without a point. This year it's still early, Drew, but he's been a consistent player for the Jets night in and night out, whether he's on the second line or on the first line, which he is right now with Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine. Nikolaj Ehlers creates a lot of time and space for himself. You know, we saw his beautiful setup for Patrick Laine's hat-trick goal against the Dallas Stars. And, you know, I mean, this guy has got such talent, and I think he's being relied upon from Paul Maurice, whether it's 5-on-5 or on the power play. So, you know, he's been very good, and he continues to get better and better. It's really fun to watch. You know, we get to cover this team, and, you know, some of the things he does on the ice are really impressive. And I think 4 goals, and to your point, Drew, he could easily have 10 goals. Mm-hmm. He's more of a playmaker. I mean, this is a guy who scored 49 goals with Halifax in his first year in the QMJHL, back-to-back 100-point seasons. So, I mean, this guy can score goals, too. But when you're playing with Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele, those guys can score, too. So, I mean,
there's only so many goals to go
around
for
everybody.
It's
one of the best lines in hockey right now. And I think, you know, Dave is bang on, you know, writing about Nikolaj Ehlers. He's kind of the forgotten guy after Scheifele and Laine.
Well, he's gone 2 games this year. The most games he's gone without a point is 2. I mean, this is a guy who's consistently putting points on the board for the Winnipeg Jets.
If you're an advanced stats guy, you look at his numbers, and he really is just sitting right behind Blake Wheeler in terms of control of the puck. And
well, you mentioned advanced stats, Dave. In terms of points per 60 minutes, he's 4th in the entire NHL.
Right.
He's got, you know, on a 60-minute basis, he gets 2.79 points per 60 minutes. That's 4th in the entire league. Whatever you think about, you know, advanced stats, that is an impressive figure. And you have to take that and say, oh, you know, you're up there with the upper echelon players. When you look at that, that's for guys who've played a minimum of 300 minutes this year.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I'm just keeping it to within the Jets specifically. And you see drivers and who's holding on to that puck and who's creating. Now, the only knock I would say on Nikolaj Ehlers is occasionally he does get a little fancy and he tries to get a little cute sometimes with the puck. And that's, I think, a circumstance of his vision and his thought and, you know, I could make this happen. And we saw it, I think, on that, it was a 2-on-1, I don't remember against who, and he tried to do something, I think it was maybe against Nashville, and he held with Scheifele, and he held on to the puck just a little bit and then tried to kind of twist around and do a behind-the-back pass. Could have worked. I mean, again, you know, if it works, it's brilliant, and if it doesn't work,
it becomes something that's
a little too cute. But again, I mean, that's when you're looking for something to nitpick on Nikolaj Ehlers' game. But again, overall, for a guy who, you know, teams should be able to defend against him in terms of, you know, they say, and remember, he's not a big guy. No. And Paul Maurice, part of what I wrote about on illegalcurve.com this week was the fact that Paul Maurice was talking about how he's a smaller guy and the schedule and how it's caught up to him and how, you know, the teams are leaning on him and stuff like that. But again, Nikolaj Ehlers hasn't shown any sort of ill effects from the opposition kind of game planning for him. And really, like I said, it's, you know, we saw it with a myriad number of Nikolaj Ehlers highlights where he comes in, controls – I don't remember who scored the – was it Bufflin's goal where he controlled the puck in the zone against four or five guys in defending against them, and then he waited. The defenseman, I thought it was Bufflin, but came in, and then Ehlers fed it over to him, and he scores the goal. And that's just kind of symptomatic of what you're getting with Nikolaj Ehlers, a guy who can control the puck, has the vision, and then facilitates that pass.
Sorry, Dave, it was the Toronto game I was thinking of where Ehlers made that pass to Laine at the end of the game that tied it up. But no, you're right, Dave. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers right now is exactly what the Jets are trying to be, right? And that is a skilled team, a possession team, and he allows them to do so much. The time and space that I talked about, I mean, it's really impressive. Ehlers is really fast, and he's very elusive. The guy's an incredible stick handler. So it's kind of similar, actually. If you watch him play, he does some things that Connor McDavid does. The ability to handle the puck at high speeds. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Nikolaj Ehlers is as good as Connor McDavid. I mean, because Connor McDavid is Connor McJesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
McMoses is the case, maybe,
with
this show.
He's the best young player in the league. But Nikolaj Ehlers is right up there with Laine and Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel. I mean, he really is one of the most talented young players in the league. And is it because he plays in Winnipeg? Maybe. Is it because he plays behind Laine and Scheifele as far as, you know, their talent and the media coverage that they get? Maybe. But, I mean, he's a big part of this team and why they've had the success that they've had this year. I realize they're struggling maybe in the standings, Drew, but you know what I mean. The Jets are not having trouble scoring goals, so... I mean, Ehlers is, like I said, he's a lot of fun to watch, and it's really fun, Dave, to watch him succeed when you thought maybe he's going to have a little bit of a sophomore slump, and he hasn't. And I actually think, Drew, that Ehlers is really motivated by playing with Patrick Laine. You see those guys hang out a lot, you know, off the ice. I don't hang out with them.
No,
but
I've been told they
hang out. You know, they're both under 20 years old, or, you know, 21 years old, sorry. Ehlers is 20, so... You know, I think he's motivated by seeing a guy like Patrick Laine and all the skill that he has, and he looks at, you know, Laine and he says, okay, I'm playing on the same line. You know, I want to be part of this. I want to, you know, be, you know, just as successful, and I want to feed off of him. So, you know, the future is very bright. I realize that, you know, Jets fans are going a little bit nuts with the way they've played, losing six of their last eight. But certainly Laine and Ehlers have been two of the biggest bright spots of this Jets team.
Absolutely. Let's head to Philadelphia. Mark Lazarus is there. He's covering Blackhawks Flyers. We'll talk to Mark ahead of the Jets' visit to Chicago tomorrow night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.